Book 1, Chapter 1. "I kill for God once more," he whispered low. As Thomas gazed over the silent valley, it seemed a veil of doom coated the mist of morn. Awake for a time, restless and anxious, he felt uneasy with a tickling dread. This battle would be different. Something this morn would change his life. He was sorry he ever met that haggard old crone warning him of danger striking from behind. She looked every bit a humped old witch when she pulled on his cuff. "Blackguard hags be damned," he huffed, and shook himself, chasing the thought away. Turning, he sniffed the damp hanging thick and looked slow toward the distant hill. No morning lark broke the silence as timid shafts of sun glistened over dawn crusts of frost. The long valley, shadowed quiet, lay waiting for the day's dying, and he sensed its scorn, knowing its blood-watered grass would rise again, leaving no memory. Standing hard in the breathless air, his eyes lingered against the ghost-colored sky, knowing the enemy arrows would find their flesh. He smirked. Certain Lady Death diced with fate's snicker for the power to decree the victor before this sun's zenith. His eyes lifted as the amber sun cracked over the edge of the land, and the curved valley slowly appeared before him. Lazy night mists, hanging low, swirled like wispy spirits sneaking sly, hiding from the day like their vampire kin. Again, thoughts of the netherworld shivered him as winter chills hit his bones, aching old wounds. He grunted, shifted his weight, and pulled his cloak tight with another deep breath, fogging the crisp air. Trumpet blast ripped the silent dawn, snapping his thoughts. Reveille. He hated it. Even the sun obeyed the call as its first glow caused the war camp to come alive with the familiar groaning, cursing, and clanking of troops. War horses rustled, stomping against the tether as they whinnied their hunger with a snort, shooting jets of steam like old dragons with no more fire. He watched bushed sentries drag back to camp, worn from the hoary night, as his stomach growled from the warm smells of the morning fare drifting by. With a last chilled shiver, he turned back as the sun melted the spirit haze, warming the plain to an Ireland green. He was surprised it was still so lush and thick this close to Christ's Day. This morn would be the final battle before winter camp, then 3 full moons of much-needed rest before the next campaign. Wandering back to his group, he was keenly aware of the legions preparing for battle, and felt blessed God favored him bigger than most. It stood him well since joining the Crusades 6 winters past. He was just 14. Thomas Michael Fallon was tall and skinny then, with strong arms from beating black red iron in his father's smithy. But as time drudged and his height grew, he vowed a different course, as he watched his father's tiring stoop and final step to the grave. So when winter bit under a harvest moon, he left to join the crusade. As water boy, he hauled bone-heavy water for 2 turns of winter for troops before and after battles. Always a pace behind the padre, he weaved between groaning and dying men begging for salvation, pouring many drops into mouths of soldiers, bleeding their souls into the earth. As moons passed, the water skins, lead heavy, made his muscles iron tough, and at 16 he was ready to kill pagan infidels. 18 campaigns since formed him battle hard, with scars to prove. His squad was hustling awake when he returned, 12 good men, and some would die today. The veterans groused at the routine of breaking camp, while the fresh replacements stayed quiet with their fear. "Good morning, lads," he greeted, knowing the worth of keeping spirits high. Chris turned with a sleepy growl. which is so happy for her. Chris was with them the longest, toughest of the lot, Irish like the rest. The command always kept Irelanders together, being Catholic and all. Over the seasons, he learned Irish squads were sent to the front more than the rest. It pissed him, but made him and his lads fierce fighters and was a point of pride. When an Irish squad strolled about the camp, no one dared cross their path, except maybe another Irish troop. But that was rare, except when sodded, because they knew their bond of blood and stuck together. As he readied, he looked over the rest. They were thick, the lot of them, and he was proud. By blood and death, they earned their badge of the toughest unit under the king's flag, willing to fight to the last man. A trumpet blast sounded from the hill, signaling the call to arms. The rustling clamor of the camp rose as the sea of troops formed into battle groups. Men yelled and dust clouded against bugle blasts and rumbling drums. "On me, lads," Thomas ordered, leading his squad to the center of the line. To the rear, jogging bowmen, 1,000 strong, sounded like flapping birds splitting equal to the right and left flanks. Behind them, 2,000 armored horse cavalry, with lances 3 men long, waited, ready. To the right, on a low hill, the king's knight and escort took positions to direct the battle. Runners, trumpeters, and flagmen at attention awaited orders to relay messages to wherever needed. Scores of mounted knights shouting encouragement whipped through the ranks on war horses directing the various fighting groups. The men cheered the pomp as wild-eyed battle horses with stiff-bowed necks and flowing manes high-stepped to their own tune. Slick sheens covered their hides as they champed and frothed the bit, huffing proud with chests thick as bison's. Tail stumps standing stiff as flagpoles sprouted from haunches so mortar-hard arrows couldn't pierce. Their riders, armored knights of St. John, seemed born to their steeds, prancing their gallant flourish. Bright coverlets and sashes with thick colors waved soft in the still morn, proclaiming holy truths and brave deeds, declaring them invincible, bequeathing courage to all. They were a wonder. With the turmoil circling him, Thomas called his men to huddle, reminding them with a stern look to stay in sight at all costs. Catching each eye, he knew just 8 were left from his original squad, and 4 just added this week were yet untested in battle. "Darby, lad, where's your cod?" he asked. Darby glanced down, nervous as a flopping fish. "I forget it," he said, blushing bright. "Too late now. Least you got your sword." The others muffled a chuckle. Another trumpet blast brought complete silence through the ranks. Only jingling tackle and shallow whispers of prayers broke the eerie hush of 10,000. At the same time, Thomas almost felt the internal click as his mind and body centered on the battle. Embracing it like a sultry lover, he looked across the narrow valley toward the pagan enemy. His body warmed as his heart turned cold, foreseeing the killing of the godless infidels before him. With shoulders hunched, his eyes grayed under narrowed brows, waiting for the trumpet march. His men sucked his energy to their bones, standing solid, ready to follow his lead. A helmet taller with heavy arms and shoulders, Thomas looked fearsome, fitted with black breastplate and silver metal helmet. Below that, a black leather face guard, stitched with thin steel rods, covered his face and neck, showing only silvered, cold eyes. A mantle of laced steel plates with the Irish ensign, stamp special, guarded his shoulders. Thick, bull leather armor strapped to his arms and legs had an oiled shine. Spiked, metal-toed sandals, invented by him, were mounted in salted leather that was boiled, formed, and dried metal tough, matched, and the steel spikes strapped to his elbows. His leather codpiece was pulled snug with leather strips instead of linen laces. He wanted no mistakes there. 2 long daggers, one at the waist, the other in a sheath strapped to his calf, matched the double-waist-high broad swords that sat heavy, crossed on his back, in leather metal sheaths oiled baby soft. The last, a narrow metal shield, heavy, thick, with a snap release, allowed a quick twist to protect the length of his back. His gear finished with a small flask of lemon water and strips of boiled cloth for any wounds. Past trials taught him fast attendance cleaning a wound and stopping the flow could determine life or death. Every foot soldier's first weapon was a broad sword near a man tall, needing most times two arms to swing. Double heavy, one blow with a claymore blade was usually plenty to cut a man down. Thomas, blessed with his left as good as his right, paid the armorer to shorten two swords a notch more than waist high. He tempered them himself, sniffing the steel, sensing time and flame perfectly. Then, under a witching moon, both were hand-honed for many turns of the glass, with ballads of battles won to teach the steel its purpose. Thomas could wield two the same, and soon won the nickname Blade. No other could match the fury of his whirling swords, one balancing the other, moving faster than any eye. When clanked with another, those close swore the metal near sang like a devil's angel. Many times he tried teaching his men the way, but their one arm was never as smart as its mate, and all lacked the strength to handle both. However, he ordered they wear spike sandals, elbow guards, water, and cloth strips. God's army waited silent as the early sun watched, gold behind them. Another slow trumpet blast, and the rattle of the marching drums signaled the advance. The troops, as one, started moving slow forward, each with his own fears and sins, watching the enemy grow before them. Blade became detached, eyes zeroed, waving his men to follow. A second trumpet, hard and sharp, blared. Knights mounted escorts, galloping up and down the ranks, kept order, spurring them on. Next, drums beat a quick step cadence, and the sound of marching men and metal filled the air. Blade forgot the count of battles past, and long forgot he joined to fight for God. He fought now to stay alive, and someday return home to Ireland. He wondered a moment if his mother still lived. "Cover me back, Blade," his man Chris yelled. "Aye, and you me," he shouted back, remembering the old hag's prophecy. Trumpets blared again and drums quickened the pace. The enemy started taking shape, advancing as one. Its worm-gray line undulated like a snake, poked here and there with bright banners marking positions. Blade and his squad jogged forward with the rest, the dust and sweat mixed in a pungent smell of fear and hate. Blade's temples pumped as his body warmed to the pace. Lessons learned hard taught him to stretch his muscles before a fight to give easy movement, a clear edge against any enemy stiff from cold, wet mornings. He felt strong, powerful, invincible. "Spread your ranks," he ordered. His men quick moved one body length apart, giving each space to wield his sword. Blade, sensing the air whispers, glanced above and spotted the arrows slicing toward their ranks. "Ready for shafts, lads," he yelled. As one, they raised their shields in front of their bodies and ducked behind to block the incoming arrows. When the first volley slammed into their ranks, the peppering clatter sounded like hail, bounced off bucklers with screams and curses, marking notice some found their mark. Blade turned around, checking his men, knowing another salvo would spray them before meeting the enemy. "Heads up now, lads, there be more," he barked. Another hail of arrows slammed down, and a yelp close rang out. Blade turned, and seeing a white shaft stuck deep in Finn's thigh, "Chris, check Finn's leg, snap it, keep moving." Chris fell back, and in a practiced move, cracked the arrow at the skin. "Can you go on, Finn?" Chris asked. "Aye, get on with you," he hissed through clenched teeth as he limped forward, taking position with sweat and curses pouring out of him. Chris returned to his post with a nod to Blade. With his squad still together, Blade turned head-on to face the enemy, a stone's throw away. "Ready now, lads, for God and England. No quarter," he shouted. Trumpets blared the final charge against thundering drums, and the Crusader horde, roaring their battle cry, stormed full run into the enemy ranks. For Blade, time slowed. In one smooth movement, he swung his shield to his back and drew the other sword. His eyes faded silver cold as his blades cut a swath before him. Enemy eyes turned to fear, watching comrades die at their feet. He seemed a giant titan wielding magic scythes, marking their fate. His machine-like moves, in concert with his men, annihilated the godless souls. Clanging metal and whooping war cries muffled curses and dying screams. Blade, plowing forward, sensed all in slow motion. Swirling his tongue, he tasted metal blood mixed with muddy dust stirred thick in the still air. Forging ever forward, he concentrated on the infidel's eyes, watching them change from hate to viewing their own death. A grunting gurgle turned him to see Finn buckle to his knees, with Saracen steel through his throat. "Josh, to your sword!" Blade yelled. "Aye," Josh said, twisting smooth, stabbing Finn's killer through the heart. Time raced and stood still. Blade, down to 9, closed ranks, not knowing the fate of the other two. Slick, bloody grass, thick with bodies covering the killing ground. He glanced left. The line was not faring well. A wedge was cracking. "On me, lads!" he bellowed, drifting over to fortify the gap. Chaos reigned as each squad fought its own war, unending booms and clanks as one soldier smashed against the other with raging screams and curses, mixed with entreaties to God. Blade, tasting his sweat, saw friend Patty fall and his bloodlust flared. His blade slashed deep, fresh with hate, cutting through armor and meat, pushing ever forward. Gulping deep breaths, his arms dead tired, kept swinging, cutting, hacking, killing. Suddenly a man as big stood before him, uniformed total black, with a half mask the same. His eyes centered on Blade, cunning and glint sure, boring black hate. Raising his sword to end Blade's life, Blade, sensing the move, dodged as the infidel's steel slashed, whisker close. His eyes turned silver cold as his blades cut a swath before him. The two backed and squared, locking eyes, forgetting the battle around them. Blade with his two modified claymores and the Turk with a hatchet blade curved like a crescent moon in one hand and a dagger, a half-man long in the other. Locking eyes, both forgot the battle surrounding them. Time slowed to a snail's pace in Blade's mind as the first flurry of banging steel and straining grunts gained no advantage for either warrior. They backed, sucking hard for breath. Blade's eyes narrowed, glaring at the bull-like man with a marble-black stare. Sensing his confident smirk beneath his mask, Blade knew what he must do. Standing a lance apart, he snapped his shield free and sailed it sideways like a skipping rock. It skidded, stopping flat a man's length from the moor, as Blade, huffing his chest full, stood tall, arms spread wide, and howled. Then, wild-eyed, he charged fate-crazy with a banshee battle cry. The infidel smirked, knowing a temper lost sealed your doom. He crouched knee low, steel ready, waiting for Blade's death as Blade knew he would. A tick before contact, Blade dropped his sword points to the shield and jumped, using them to vault over the moor's head. In one motion, he twisted in the air and landed on his feet, facing his enemy's back. Surprised, the moor twisted around too late as Blade's swords hacked cruelly down both shoulders, sinking deep in his chest. The moor, with arms slack, felt his bones crunch and his lungs suck raw air. His fate known, He looked at Blade with a snarl of admiration before crumpling to his knees in death. Suddenly, a rank of distant trumpets sounded retreat, and the infidels turned and ran. God won the day. The crusaders stopped in their tracks and watched the troop of cavalry thunder through the fleeing pagans with heavy hoof and lowered lances, completing the slaughter. Blade and his men slumped as their pumped blood ebbed, leaving lead-heavy arms and numbed wounds. Looking over the carpet of dead covering the battlefield, Blade slowly led them to the rear, looking for his missing men. Stepping over the bodies, a dying Saracen behind him rolled with a final breath and swung his scimitar one last time, slicing Blade's Achilles heel. Blade yelped and twisted away, collapsing to the ground, as Chris, jumping forward, ran his sword through the enemy's chest. "Where'd he hit you?" Chris asked. Blade sat up and pressed the wound closed with his hand. "Me foot. It doesn't seem bad," Blade said, wrapping it quick with a cloth. Finished, he clasped Chris's arm, pulled himself up, and fell over with the first step. His foot failed to work. The old hag foretold true. This morn would change his life.